I'm nearly normal Jim. I'm an alcoholic. It's a good day to not have to quit drinking. Boy, I can't imagine a nicer introduction. Or a more telling way that this program works, because I was given the same thing when I got here by a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't just teach me how to change in this program or how to get sober, they showed me. And that was the most important thing to me, was seeing other people do it. When Marshall talked about having fun in the program, it just takes me back to a million different things that has happened in my life, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm always better if I just start right at the beginning of my drinking. I never intended to drink. I can remember as a kid that I used to say that I was never going to drink. My father drank, and it caused a lot of problems in my house growing up. So I swore I was never going to do that. But I also swore that I was never going to smoke, and I said I was never going to swear. And it wasn't too many years down the road, I was saying things like, "Son of a bitch, I left my cigarettes at the bar." I was always willing to compromise for the addiction, and never ever realized it. I was one of these guys that would drink and fall down and swear that I only had a couple, or I would have excuses 18 miles long as to why I was the way I was. The first time I drank, I went into a blackout. I didn't know that's what it was at the time. I didn't find out until years later that's what they called them. And I drank by accident that day. It was at a cousin's wedding. I got into the spiked punch, and I liked it well enough to keep going back to it, even though I was warned after a point that maybe I might not want to do that. I was only 12. And from that first time, I can think that my alcoholism went full circle. I went from swearing that I was never going to drink to planning how I was going to get the next one. And it was always like that. I hung around with cousins in town that had more access to it than I did. I lived out in what I lovingly call Cabbageville. And so they had neighbors that had garages open, and we had full reign. And I can remember at a young age thinking that drinking was going to make a good time a better time, and it was going to make a bad time a better time. And I always had that notion that I had to control my drinking. And I never could. I stunk as a drinker. Years later, I found drugs, and I found, if I could do the right combination, then I thought I could avoid the blackouts. My plan was always to drink up to a blackout. If I could just achieve that, I'd be all right. It was after I got into blackouts that I started having car accidents and arguments and kicked out of bars and things like that, But none of my plans for drinking ever seemed to work out, because once I had the first one, then it led to the second one, and by the second one, then I just didn't care. And that was just standard, the way my drinking went. And it progressed pretty quickly. I mean, I got drunk most times. I once told my wife years later, I didn't get drunk every time I drank, but I always wanted to. It was always something outside of myself that kept that from happening. I'd get kicked out of the place. Generally, I ran out of money. I had a real problem with that. That was a real problem. When my wife, before she found Al-Anon, decided that she was going to fix me, one of her methods was, I think I got, and she'd correct me, I'm sure, if she was here, 50 cents a day. And she couldn't understand how I could get as drunk as I did on 50 cents a day. And if I look back, I don't know how I did it, But I guess I had my methods, I worked in a shop, always have, and found that the guys that I worked with, the guys that I hung with, I should say, were the ones that drank like I did. I never had a hard time finding them. They were always there. And it was a rapid progression. I mean, I just deep ended on everything and anything I ever did. I don't know where that comes from. I don't really care now, because the cure is the same. No matter how I got my alcoholism, no matter how I got my drug addiction, the cure is the same. A day at a time, I have to stay away from it. And this fellowship is what showed me that that's possible. And this fellowship is what showed me that it's real worthwhile. You know, I don't know how the heck you couldn't have enjoyed today, you know, the temperature, and I love being out in it. And I was out most of the day taking down Christmas lights. You just can't jump into these things after Christmas, you know. and I got them. I got quite a few down. They're not all down, but I got quite a few of them down. And I took my dog for a walk. I gave my dog a bath this morning. My wife's dog, I should say. I don't have a dog. And it was a wonderful day. I had coffee with my wife and daughter this morning. When I think of the days that I woke up with the cold shoulder, so to speak, and my wife and I not talking and not knowing when I was going to be talking to her, today was real special, you know. Those kind of things are real easy to take for granted after a period of sobriety for me. And it's one of those things that I need reminded of, and I get reminded of when I'm around Alcoholics Anonymous, when I have to do this in particular, you know. I always say that my wife invented primal screaming long before Lonnie Anderson made it a cute little rehab type thing. And we went through that kind of a thing a couple of times in my drinking. And I always say, you know, I mean, I make jokes about it, but I say too, you know, that I married St. Teresa. I mean, my wife was one of those, you know, I couldn't go to work. When I drank, I missed a lot of work. And in fact, seeing Heidi here, her dad used to answer the phone for the shop I worked for in the morning. And I hoped that he answered the phone, because I didn't want the boss to answer the phone. You know, if Bill answered the phone, then I could count on, you know, at least I wouldn't get reamed out about things. You know, he was pretty nice about stuff. And I was thinking about that when I saw her tonight. But I missed a lot of work. And my wife worked 9 years as a nurse before we had kids, and she wound up quitting to be a homemaker. And I think she missed 3 days of work in 9 years. And a couple of them were for her father's funeral, so I guess it was acceptable. But I miss work all the time. I couldn't party and drink the way I did and not miss work. And we had all kinds of problems, and I had all kinds of car wrecks. And back then, they didn't, you know, there wasn't the DUI stuff going on that there are now. And I skated on a lot of stuff. I should have been dead a lot of times. And life went on for, I don't know, 8 or 10 years like that. I had that feeling of impending doom. I had all those negative emotions that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't even know other people had till I got here, you know. I didn't fit in anywhere. When I drank, I felt like I did. You know, all those kinds of things. A lot of this stuff, you know, I learned when I got here, because I kind of lived in a bubble, you know. I had a real kind of a boring existence. But I can remember one time in particular. I was in a bar, and it was pretty early on, and I had the job at the time. I was working, and for the first time, I had that feeling of, this is okay. This is where I belong. This is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. Shoot pool, drink beer, listen to sad songs on a jukebox, and I was right at home, you know. And I swear to God, that feeling lasted about 2 seconds and it was gone, and I never got it back. But isn't it strange that of all the things that happened, you know, while I drank, that's one of the things that I happen to remember, you know, was that feeling of everything's okay, and I'm okay with the way this is, you know. And I think I felt that way as far as, you know, the one thing drinking did, you know, when we talk about cunning, baffling, and powerful, is the fact that it took away so many of my positive emotions. You know, all the things that I grew up with, my generation, peace and love and all that stuff, you know, it all went out the window when I drank. And I didn't know that those things were actions as well as feelings, you know, but the feelings were gone. All I was left with was anger and rage and hatred and all those negative things, you know, and didn't even notice that the good stuff was going, you know. Didn't even notice that my attitude about my job and my and my wife in general was going down the tubes. And I got here and I saw people laughing and carrying on and having a good time with their wife, and they weren't drinking and they were able to not drink. And it was just I just couldn't fathom it. You know, I couldn't see that in myself. I got to say first, and I meant to do this first, but sometimes the little gray cells just they don't work in order, you know. But yeah, did you say your name was Joan?
Jill.
Okay, my ears don't work real good either sometimes. But Jill and Lance with 5 months and Laura with 7 months, that's amazing. It's really good to see you three. And this is a bit of an exercise, see, because I'm the same guy to ask you three times at a game of pool, do I have high balls or low balls, you know? And I remember all of that, see, so that tells me that it's still working, you know? But when I first got sober, when I actually got sober, I used to go to the midnight meeting at Crossroads, and that was one of the few meetings in the area that would give you a certificate for months. Everywhere else I went on the west side in particular was years, you know? Well, hell, I couldn't have stayed sober a year for all the money in the world. You know, but I managed to put together a month, and they give you a certificate. And we used to stand up, and at Crossroads back then, there were a lot of people, and, you know, there'd be a half a dozen birthdays with a month, you know, and then 2 months, you'd have three or four birthdays, and 3 months, you're down to one or two. But anyways, there was one other guy that had one day less than I, and every month I'd get up, and Jack would get up, and I had one month, and two, and then three, and we followed each other all the way through till we each had our 1 year. And I mean, it was just the neatest thing, because I look forward to seeing Jack and hoping that he made it that month, you know. And so those months really meant a lot to me, because I could not put together any amount of time when I first got in this fellowship. I didn't take to it right away. Anyway, so 10 years down the road, or roughly thereof, I wind up having to go on a rehab. I make this grand confession to my wife. The mortgage payment is gone. I'm all out of vacation at work, and it's February. And, you know, there's the bank account's been cleaned out. And, I mean, it was horrible, just horrible. And she'd heard it before. And she went and had a talk with her minister. I didn't realize it, but at the time she'd already been to the lawyer and had papers drawn up, and I was on my way out and didn't even know it. And... But at any rate, he recommended a local rehab, and that was the most foreign thing in the world to me, because I'd never been in a hospital. And but we went in there to check it out, and I can remember the young lady that did the intake or whatever asking me. I said to her, I said, you know, this is kind of, you know, it's a real nice place you have here, but I really don't know if I need this, you know. And I was sincere about it. You know, I really wanted to quit what I was doing at that point. I have to add that. But I didn't know if I needed hospitalization, you know. And she said, well, how often do you drink and get high? Do you do it every day? And I laughed and said, every day, every hour. And she said, well, then you need this. And it was just, she was so quick about it. I was really surprised, you know. And I said, well, you know, but it made an impression, because I thought to myself, you know, if this lady says that, you know, for the first time, I think, in my life, I was honest about my usage, you know. And I thought, geez, you know, if she's so on top of this, you know, maybe there's something to it, you know. And so I agreed to go into the thing. I begged off for 3 days because I had some things to do. I had some amends to make and some things to do along them lines concerning my family. And that's what I did. I had made the commitment, and so I wound up going in there 3 days later. And I didn't drink in those 3 days in between there. I just happened to think of that. But at any rate, so I went in. I did 28 days, came out of there not really understanding the compulsion of alcoholism, or accepting it, I guess, maybe is the thing. I'm sure they told me about it, and we heard a lot of fabulous AA leads while we were in there. And they took us out to some really good meetings back then. The 512 meeting was going on, and they got out of town leads. And, you know, I mean, it was a real education. But I did not understand that the compulsion could come back, because I just assumed I wasn't going to want to drink or get high anymore. And a couple weeks later, the compulsion hit me, and I was back out again. And it went on until things got bad again, and I went to my home group, I think it was, and I and I reintroduced myself, and lo and behold, I was able to quit again. And that went on for a couple weeks, maybe a month, I don't know, a couple months, and the compulsion hit, and I was back out again. And I'm still not understanding, because what I didn't understand was the disease concept of this that big book talks about, the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body. You know, I had put it together for me. For other people, yeah, I could understand it. You think you have a disease. To me, that was just a big cop-out. But at any rate, I don't know at what point. It was a good year and a half down the road. It took me 2.5 years to get my first year of sobriety. I came to a work, and I was in exactly the same place that I had been previous every time. And I said a prayer that day. I asked God to get me through the day sober and straight and promised him that I would make an honest go of this fellowship. By then, I'd been around long enough. The one thing I had done was kept coming back. You know, people told me to keep coming back no matter what, and that's the one thing I did do. I am not proud of it, but I went to meetings high many times. So I said that prayer, and God got me through that day, and lo and behold, it was Tuesday night. My home group meets that night, and I went there and reintroduced myself for God knows how many times it was. And once again, they welcomed me back. You know, there might have been a few tisking and tutting in the back of the room, as my sponsor says. But nobody made me feel less than. They all welcomed me back, and I was able to start on my journey of sobriety. My wife would tell you that she felt that there was something different that time. In the meantime, she'd found Al-Anon, and that's what saved our marriage. There's not a doubt in my mind. So my journey in sobriety started. Each time that I had come back and reintroduced myself, I would try doing some of the things that people suggested. Well, once I got a sponsor, and then I tried to work the steps, and I started to go to more than one meeting a week. That was a big step, because when I came out of the rehab, I thought, you know, if they wanted you to have this like aftercare plan, and I said, well, I'll go to a meeting every week. How's that, you know? And they weren't real impressed. I thought it was, you know, really bending over backwards for my sobriety, but they didn't seem to think so. So God started working in my life from that day on. There's not a doubt in my mind. Things started happening that, as I look back, can only be explained by the grace of God. You know, I started having people put in my life. Now, I had previously, people had tried their darndest to help me get this program, some really good people in AA. My first sponsor was one of them guys who would do anything for you, and did. Took me to all kinds of out-of-town meetings and got me involved in other aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've always said if all I could do was come to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and hang on by my fingernails to sobriety, it would be a pretty boring existence. But we went to meetings out of town, and it's one of the things that I enjoy doing even now. I love going to meetings when I'm out of town, and I get to do that a lot. It's a real, real blessing. So I think one of the biggest things, and I don't talk about this very often, is the fact that I got involved in service. And that was kind of a strange deal, too, because I had no intention of doing any of that. But the spring conference was coming up, and Jack Lipinski said that they needed people to serve coffee. And I said, well, you know, I can do that. They wanted you for a two-hour shift. And that particular year, it was in at the Bel Air Hotel, and it just so happened that the coffee area was right outside the meeting room, so you got to hear all the leads that were going on while you're serving the coffee. And one of the things I discovered, if you have the coffee, the people that want it are friendly. And, you know, people came up and smiling, and laughing, and talking, you know, and next thing you know, I'm doing the same thing, you know. And they couldn't get rid of me. I think I took most every shift, you know. I just fell in love with it. It was the greatest thing in the world. And again, if you'd asked me when I got here, I would tell you I'm not a people person, you know. I like to think of myself as that now, but people might not agree, you know. And that was the start for me, I have to say, that was the start. And then I started to go to Central Committee meetings. The other thing that happened, and that was actually previous to the conference thing, was I started going into the Erie County Prison. And it's a bit embarrassing, but I started doing that before I actually got sober and straight the last time. At that time, you could get in if you wanted to. And We used to have a guy show up in my Tuesday night men's group. His name was Herb Barrett. He used to say, anybody wants to go into the Erie County prison, show up at 5:30 Monday night, we'll take you in. And I heard him say that week after week after week, and I don't know if anybody ever took him up on it. One day, for whatever reason, I decided I was going to do that. And I went in there with him. There was another guy going in there at the time. And at that time, I was sober. I had been sober maybe 2 or 3 months at that time. And I fell in love with that aspect of sobriety. There was just something about carrying the message in there that was different than anything I had heard on the outside. And I started doing it every week. I went back every week, and I was doing it and have been doing it ever since. I have had a bit of a hiatus when I got put on second shift here about 8.5 years ago, but I was able to go into the pre-release and do a meeting in there in the morning. So it's been a part of my sobriety ever since. And over those years, I've worked with some unbelievable people that went in there with me, Rex being one of them, and just a whole bunch of other good guys. And I don't know how many times I went into that meeting, and you know, maybe at this point now I'm married and I've got kids and everything, maybe I go in there and my kids have been irritating, you know, doing something that fry me, and then I hear somebody in that meeting talk about how they can't see their kids, you know, their wives won't bring them in to see them or this or that, and how they miss their kids, you know, and I never fail to leave that meeting feeling better than when I went in, you know. And it's not, most times it's not just a, you know, but for the grace of God kind of thing. It's an actual, there's a feeling. I don't know how to describe it. And I'll leave it at that. It's been a really big part of my sobriety. And the other service things that I've done have all played into it. I feel best, I think, when in Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm giving back somewhat, you know. This is the easy part. I mean, I got to tell you, I don't have a problem leading. It's easy to talk, you know. But it's hard getting out of here and carrying this thing. You know, Paul Simpson always says, if you want to know how somebody's doing in this fellowship, ask their wife. And on a good day, my wife would probably tell you I'm doing okay, you know. Some other days, not so well. I've had a lot of good things happen in sobriety. Where are we at here? And I'd like to talk about those because that's really, you know, why I'm still sober. You know, because I have a life today. When I think of the life that I did not have when I drank, you know, how everything was always the same, and I would swear it was going to be different. Today I'm going to go to work, and I'm going to put in a full 8 hours, and I'm going to go home and mow the lawn and have dinner with the wife and watch TV like other people do. And about 10 o'clock in the morning, I would get this thing talking to me saying, Jim, you know, it's not going to be like that. You're going to go out at break time. You're going to go out at lunch time. You might not come back after lunch, but you're sure to hell not going to work till 3:30 like everybody else. You're going to be out here at 3 o'clock and at the bar. And it was generally like that. And that was the disease concept of this thing that I'm telling you about. That was the obsession of the mind. That's what made me a little bit different, I think, than the other drinkers in the place. The allergy of the body is what made it impossible for me to stop. Once I started, it was always something outside of myself that was going to make me stop. And when I saw that in myself, when I saw that disease concept and realized that I had it, that's what alcoholism was to me, it made it a little bit easier to want to stop and want to get the hell away from it. And I didn't know how to do it until I got here and saw other people able to do it. And to this day, I can tell you, I don't know how it works. I just know that it does. I just know that it does. A day at a time, I can keep the obsession away. If the obsession hits me when I leave this meeting tonight, I'm going to get drunk. There's not a doubt in my mind. It's real natural for me to think about drinking. They have enough advertisements on television still. They have enough advertisements driving down the road. People talk about it at the shop. It's the most natural thing in the world for me to think about drinking. But I don't have the obsession to drink. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous keeps at bay, the obsession. I don't mind thinking about drinking. I don't romance the drink anymore. I really don't. I don't let it get in there and stay for any length of time at all. But I don't have the obsession to drink today, and that's what you've given me, plain and simple. That's what, maybe it was working the steps. Maybe it was making that first friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe it was making that first phone call to my sponsor. And I hated the idea of calling somebody and saying, hey, I'm having a rough day, you know. But I'll tell you a quick story about how that worked in my life. I went to work. I was sober at the time. And my wife had packed my lunch for one of the few times in my working career. And she had made cheese and American cheese and ham sandwiches. And I opened it up and I thought, what the heck is this? She knows I like Swiss cheese on my ham. What the hell did she give me American cheese for? And I got mad. And the madder I got, the more ludicrous it sounded to me. And I knew it was. And yet I couldn't shake the feelings. And that's something that was part of my drinking too. Once I got a feeling, I couldn't talk myself out of it. And that's the way this was. And I thought, wait, this is what they mean in AA, that you should call your sponsor when this happens. Well, we'll see. It'll go away. Well, it didn't. And so I fought it for a long time, and finally I thought, well, all right, I know he's just going to laugh his ass off at me, you know, but I'll do it. So I called my sponsor and I told him, and he laughed his ass off. And the next thing you know, I'm not mad about the ham and Swiss cheese sandwiches. And it was just one of those things. It was the first step. It was the first time. And my sponsor told me that, you know, the first time you do that, the first time you call me, you know, you'll feel better. You know, and I find that to be true about almost everything I've ever done in AA, and a lot of times in a lot of things I've done in life. A couple years ago, my wife and I got a 1963 Scotty camper. It's 10 feet long and 6 feet wide, and there's just barely enough room for the two of us, and we had to redo the entire thing. And so now we're going to get back into camping. When our kids were little, we used to go on a pop-up. So now we're going to do this thing, and we found there's a group of people that own these, and they have different little rallies where sometimes there's 8 or 10 of them get together. And so my wife hooks us up with one of these things, and I'm not real happy about it. You know, I'd like to go to Cook's Forest in it and hang around my AA friends, you know, but I don't know about anybody, about going to hang out with anybody else, you know. So anyway, we're going to West Virginia. You know, I'm a little bit nervous when I get south of Meadville. If you've ever seen the movie Easy Rider, you know why. But anyways, so we go to West Virginia, and we pull into this place, and I find out the lady tells us, well, you can share a spot with me and my Scotty camper. And I'm thinking, I don't even get my own damn spot, you know. But, well, whatever, you know. So I go to back in, and the lady, I have the window down, and she puts her hand on my shoulder, and she says, I hope you don't mind a little, you know, noise and partying, because we like to party. And I said, well, you know, I don't really party myself, but I'm pretty tolerant, you know. She puts her hand on my shoulder, and she says, oh, you will, honey, you will. And I thought, oh, shit, what did I get myself into, you know. Well, it turns out their idea of partying is one or two beers and then go to bed at 9:30, you know? I'm thinking, really? But anyway, and it turns out they turn out to be wonderful friends. My wife and I, for the last 5 or 6 years, have just had a blast doing this thing. And it's just another one of the, and one of the things my wife said to me is, it'll be good to get out of our comfort zone. And I have to say, she was absolutely right, because I had learned that lesson in AA many times over the years, you know, from going into the jail to doing service work. When I get out of my comfort zone, that's when God can work. You know, when I'm all holed up and by myself, there ain't much he can do with me, you know. But when I get out of my comfort zone and I do some of those things, and I got to tell you, I don't just rush to the door. I always got to be pried, you know, it's never my idea. But I am more open to it now than I ever have been, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. Been a lot of things that happened since I got sober. My mother got Alzheimer's and passed away after about a 6 or 7 year ordeal with it, and I was able to be there every step of the way. And at the same time, Butch P's mother was going through it. And she was in the same facility as my mom, and I would see him and how he carried himself over the whole thing. And I think we both played off each other a little bit with that. It was kind of a neat experience. And then my mom wound up in a different facility, and I kind of lost that thing with Butch. But it's just one of those things, one of those gifts that I was given in AA that I could be there, because my mom was the one I lied to the most. My mom was the one that bailed me out the most. My mom was the one that fronted me money when other people wouldn't even dream of it. And, you know, I was able to make amends long before the Alzheimer's set in. She got to see me sober for quite a long time. But it was one of those things that I wouldn't, you know, I cherish now. All the memories. And, I mean, some of them are downright hysterical. I mean, really and truly. And that was one of the things, getting out of my comfort zone. They had a seminar on Alzheimer's at the Sarah Reed home. And I went there. In fact, a lady that I went to school with presented part of it. But at any rate, the one thing that they said was, you got to handle it with humor. And I thought, well, man, that's my mantra about a lot of things in life, you know. But my daughter was the one that hit things on the head more than anything else. She said, you know, when it comes to grandma, I just smile and nod. And I thought, you know, that's perfect. That is absolutely perfect, you know. And so, you know, that was another part of my sobriety, part of my journey here today, till today, you know. And this is what matters today. You know, all the things that happened up till today, they wouldn't mean anything if I wasn't sober today. My sobriety is the most important thing I got right today. The job, I got to mention the job. I was 33 years at a place and they closed and moved out of town. And people said, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. I don't have any idea. And I really didn't. You know, and it was kind of comical because some of the guys that I worked with said, oh, the hell with this place, I'll go back to school and become a nurse. Well, my wife had gone back to school and become a nurse, and I knew what it took, and I knew they didn't have what it took. So I wasn't going to say stuff like that. But at any rate, you know, it worked out God's way, you know, really and truly. One of the guys that I worked with that was a real go-getter wound up getting a job. And I said, well, you know, what are you doing? Where are you working? He told me he was working, doing the same thing he had started at our shop doing 25 years earlier. And we both got kind of a kick out of it, you know. Well, then he wound up bidding off that job, and it came up, and he telephoned me. He said, you put your application in, you know. And so I did, and geez, it looked like I had a lock on the job, you know. I went in there with the paperwork and all that, you know, and I had this guy pulling for me, three or four people in AA pulling for me to get that job, and, you know, I thought it was mine. And I went to work, back. We were still working under the guise of maybe getting a severance package, and we kept that same job for a year and a half. But in the meantime, this job that I'm trying to get, a friend of mine says, hey, I want you to know I applied for that job that you applied for. He said, I didn't want you to think I went behind your back, and it looks pretty good that I'm going to get it. And I'm kind of laughing up my sleeve thinking, no, it doesn't. You know, I'm the one that's going to get it. Well, it wasn't. He got it. And it really fried me, you know. But, you know, I had a chance to, you know, think it over over the course of an evening, and I came to this brilliant conclusion. He and I had been friends for years, you know, it wouldn't do me much good to be an a-hole about it. So, you know, the next day I was able to congratulate him, and even though I had a heck of a resentment inside, I didn't act on it. And so, ironically enough, my son had got in the military and was in basic training at the time, and he graduated from basic training, and I was able to take a trip because I was still at that shop and had vacation time to go down and see him graduate. Went further on down to Florida and visited my sister, made a whole week trip of it that I would not have been able to do had I gotten that job. So, gee, thanks, God. That was pretty nice. Well, lo and behold, 2 months later, this guy bids off that job, and it comes up available again. And because I hadn't been an idiot to him, he was another one of the guys that were pushing for me to get that job, and long and short of it, 6 months down the road, whatever it was, I got the job. I don't think it was a coincidence. You know, I think it was God working in my life, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Because my first reaction was to really raise hell about that guy getting a job, you know. And I've had all kinds of those things happen in my life. But I got to be aware of them. And I'm not as aware of them if I'm not going to meetings and hanging around AA people as I am when I am. Plain and simple. If I let those things they talk about being too hungry, tired, lonely, you know, all those things. A lot of my good feelings still go out the window, and I'm unaware of the things that are going on that make this special, you know. This very day, like I talked about, that was so special, would have not been as special had I not known that I was coming here tonight and going to be around today. And if I wasn't going to be leading this meeting tonight, I was going to be at a meeting tonight, you know. I still go to a lot of meetings, and now that I'm back on, about 6 months ago, I got forced back on days from this shop that I'm at now, and you know, again, that was one of those things that I wasn't real happy about. I did not want to go on days. I was pretty comfortable on second shift where I was at. I was going to daytime meetings and Saturday night meetings and still maintaining, you know. But now I'm able to get back to a lot of the meetings that I missed for so many years and see a lot of the people that I missed for so many years. And, you know, again, there's God's got a plan. I don't know what it is, but I'm pretty grateful that I'm a part of it. You know, I really don't have too much else to say. I'd like to thank Marshall for asking me, and I know there's some kind of an award show on TV. I was going to guarantee that you'd at least get to see the last one of the, what is it, best picture or whatever, but you probably do better than that. So thanks for being here tonight. Some of my favorite people are in this room. God bless every one of you. Thanks.